67 and sunny on a Thursday evening here in Lansing. Got to love it. We're heading into a weekend of 80-degree weather, sunny skies all weekend. Well, thank you for joining us this evening. I'm Michael Cohen with producer Jesse Wiza. This is 1320 WILS. On today's show, new information out just today that a bigger iPhone is coming from Apple this year. It's part of a growing trend of smartphones with larger screens, but is that something consumers really want? We'll find out. And the story surrounding the former Democratic state representative here in Michigan, who is now running as a Republican, continues to get increasingly bizarre. Kyle Malin from MERS Newsletter will be joining me to talk about what Democrats are calling a case of fraud. But first, a state land auction recently taking place here in Michigan for over 100,000 acres in 23 counties, and that's going to be used for oil and gas drilling. This is happening as Lansing lawmakers debate whether to impose fracking regulations. So the question is, what is the economic impact of pursuing aggressive drilling in Michigan? And is it outweighed by the potential economic costs, environmental ones for that matter? To discuss that, I'm joined by Dr. Bernard Weinstein. He's an economist and associate director of the McGuire Energy Institute at Southern Methodist University. He was a keynote speaker at the Michigan Chemistry Council's annual meeting in Lansing this week to discuss a sensible path to U.S. energy security. Dr. Weinstein, thank you so much for joining us here on 1320 WILS.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Now, what was your primary message when you spoke in Lansing this week to the council's annual meeting?
My overall theme was that the United States does not have a sensible energy policy and that we desperately need one. We are an energy-rich nation. We need to be pursuing what President Obama has called an all-of-the-above strategy, though I don't think that the president really has in his mind what that would involve, and in particular, exploit the potential for natural gas. We have shale gas fields all over the United States. There's been a lot of new development. That shale gas revolution started in North Texas, where I live, and now it's spreading around the country, and indeed in the state of Michigan. There's a fair amount of exploration and production occurring right now. And as you mentioned, there was a fairly sizable lease sale last week.
Now, the economic benefits, certainly to the natural gas companies, is obvious. But there are these concerns about the environmental impact of drilling deeply into the ground, potentially affecting local water supplies. Certainly the chemicals involved in fracking are incredibly toxic. What do you say to these underlying environmental concerns?
Well, I think you need to look at the scientific facts. The people who are opposed to natural gas drilling and the use of hydraulic fracturing are generally pursuing that agenda because they don't like fossil fuels overall. There's no such thing as a good fossil fuel. So a lot of unwarranted concerns have been raised about the potential for hydraulic fracturing, say, to contaminate groundwater. Now, we have been fracking in the United States for 60 years. In fact, you've been fracking wells in the state of Michigan for the last 45 years. To date, there has been not one documented case of groundwater contamination resulting from hydraulic fracturing. Another issue that's sometimes raised by opponents of natural gas drilling is that the fracking process can cause earthquakes. Well, here again, there is absolutely no scientific evidence to show that the process of hydraulic fracturing has caused earthquakes or any unusual seismic activity.
Well, no, when you say there's been no documented case of fracking causing water contamination, is that simply that there's no been directly proven case? I mean, there certainly are allegations by some people who live close to fracking operations that their water has been affected, has there not?
Well, there have been a few cases in which improper disposal of drilling fluids has polluted surface water, but that's a different kind of problem, and it's only happened in relatively few cases. And when you consider that we've fracked probably 200,000 or 300,000 wells in the U.S., and we've only had a handful of these surface spills, I think that's a pretty good record overall, but there have been some unscrupulous drilling companies that have not been careful about disposing of these fluids. And as you mentioned, there are some chemicals of that fracking mixture. It's mainly sand and water. 2 to 3% different types of chemicals that are used to help tease the gas bubbles out of the shale rock. So, yes, it's important that those fluids be disposed of properly.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you, when you look at the long-term ability to rely on natural gas that's here in Michigan and nationwide, how sustainable of a resource is that in ensuring our energy security?
Well, the numbers keep changing almost weekly, but the numbers are changing in a positive way, which is to say right now the U.S. Environmental the U.S. Energy Information Administration estimates that we have about 150 years worth of natural gas at current levels of consumption. But it seems like every couple of weeks those estimates go up, estimates either from a government agency or from private entities who are involved in gas drilling. We have shale formations all over the U.S. Not all of them will prove to be commercially productive, but many of them are. And the Marcellus Shale in the Northeast is going and blowing. We have huge activity occurring in Texas and Louisiana and some of the mountain states. Mm-hmm. And it's not just shale gas. We're producing a lot more oil from shale formations as well.
I'm talking to Dr. Bernard Weinstein, an economist, associate director of the McGuire Energy Institute at Southern Methodist University. He was just here in Lansing this week. When you look at the political nature that the energy debate has taken here in the country, with the green energy companies on one side who critics say often implode and fail, and the drill baby drill crowd on the other, how is that impacting our energy policy?
Oh, I think it's impacting it in a very negative way. I think it's probably set back the prospects for energy security. And I say it in the following sense. I don't have anything against renewables and wind and solar, but the environmental lobby have convinced the current administration in Washington that we can get all the energy we need from a combination of renewables and conservation and efficiency. And the truth is that we can't. We can build all the windmills and solar panels we want, but we're still going to need baseload energy because those are intermittent resources. And my other complaint is that over the last 10 years, we have put $150 billion worth of taxpayer subsidies into the renewable sector. And the president claims it's been a good investment because it's helping to wean us off of oil and it's supporting 75,000 jobs. Well, in fact, only about 2% of the nation's electricity is coming from renewables. And if you look at, say, the oil and gas industry, in the last 5 years, oil and gas has produced 650,000 new jobs with no federal subsidies.
What do you say when you see what happened in the Gulf? We seem to have such a short memory, but the massive oil spill that occurred there and just the nature of the potential for these kinds of disasters to occur, how should that be affecting our decision to drill here in the country, or should we not be really considering that as a factor?
We need to recognize that there is risk associated with all human activity and with all economic activity and all industrial activity. What we need to do, particularly in the aftermath of the Macondo incident in the Gulf, is be very, very careful. Indeed, we've learned a lot from that blowout, and we now have new standards, we have new equipment available, so that in the unlikely event that there is another major leak or rupture from a well in the deep water Gulf of Mexico, we now have equipment that can contain that emission of oil quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And you also have to keep in mind that we've been drilling in the Gulf of Mexico for 60 years, and this was the first major accident.
How much drilling, compared to what we're doing now, how much more drilling do you think we should be doing here on the mainland of the U.S. to secure our energy resources?
Well, on the mainland, we've seen a significant increase in oil production over the last 3 years. Even with the moratorium in the Gulf of Mexico, domestic oil production has gone up for 3 consecutive years, and that hasn't happened since the crude oil from Alaska came online. When you say how much should we be doing, well, that's ultimately going to be determined by demand and by market forces. But I think it's unwise to keep all of the outer continental shelf off limits, half of the Gulf of Mexico off limits, all of the Pacific coast off limits, most of Alaska, and for that matter, most federal lands. So the oil and gas production we're seeing today and the increases in oil and gas are coming almost entirely from private lands, because basically those lands over which the federal government has control, whether they're onshore or offshore, are still pretty much off limits to drilling.
And what about nuclear energy? Have we basically given up on that as a country? And should we be focusing much more energy on developing nuclear energy?
I don't think we can turn our backs on nuclear. On the other hand, in the aftermath of the Fukushima accident last year, I don't expect to see much activity, at least for a decade. Right now, there is only one nuclear plant under construction in the United States. A year ago, or say right before Fukushima, there were 26 applications before the Nuclear Regulatory Commission for new plants. They have all been put on hold, with the exception of this one plant in Georgia that's being built today. Other countries around the world are investing in nuclear energy. They're being more cautious. Mm-hmm. Even those countries like China and India that have been building dozens of nuclear plants are doing a review of their safety processes, but they're not stopping. They're going ahead with the construction of nuclear plants. In fact, later this month, I'm going to be speaking at a conference in Doha, Qatar, about nuclear energy, because you even have countries in the Middle East that are rich with oil and gas looking at a nuclear option for generating electricity.
Well, certainly Iran is apparently claiming that also. But one last thing, about a minute left. Tell me, we haven't seen any major interruption in our fuel sources. There are these fears out there that we could be shut off from oil and so on. Do you, as an expert in this energy field, do you think that we are at any point on the cusp of having that kind of event occur?
If you mean something like the OPEC embargo of 1973, I think that's highly unlikely. Another point that often is not recognized is that when it comes to oil consumption, we peaked in 2005. The United States will never consume as much oil as we did in 2005. The projections from the U.S. Department of Energy show a steady decline in oil use in the U.S., and that's occurring because, number one, we've become more efficient in the way we use oil, and number two, we're substituting things like natural gas for oil. I think we'll see more natural gas being used as a motor vehicle fuel, and the consensus is that we have passed that peak oil consumption level and that we're on a steady decline.
And Dr. Bernard Weinstein, an economist, associate director of the McGuire Energy Institute at Southern Methodist University, was just here in Lansing this week. Dr. Weinstein, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Oh, happy to talk to you anytime.
Coming up next, we'll talk about this crazy case out in Grand Rapids involving this state representative who decided he wants to switch parties, and things have exploded since then. That's next. I'm Michael Cohen. This is 1320 WILS.